All right, we're going live in a second. We're recording. Good evening, welcome to tonight's meeting of Bethlehem City Council for Tuesday, August 17th, 2021. Time is 7:12 p.m. Would all please rise for Pledge of Allegiance?
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you all. The clerk will please call the roll.
Mr. Callahan?
Present.
Mr. Cologne?
Present.
Ms. Crampy Smith?
Present.
Ms. Negron?
Presente.
Mr. Rattle?
Present.
Dr. Van Wert?
Present.
Mr. Waldron?
Present. I apologize for the late start. We had a committee meeting, go a little bit long before tonight's council meeting. And prior to our consideration of our regular agenda items this evening, council will hold a public hearing to accept recommendations and public comment concerning the proposed creation of an affordable housing LRTA program on the city's south side. In connection with the public hearing, there's a communication which the clerk will read, communication 6A.
A memorandum from Darlene Heller, Director of Planning and Zoning, stating that the City Planning Commission met on August 13, 2020 and approved revised geographic boundaries for the LRTA area in South Bethlehem, presented in tonight's public hearing materials.
The public hearing is now called to order. To accept recommendations and public comment concerning a proposed bill that would amend Article 342 along with an associated resolution that would create an affordable housing LRTA program in the south side of the city. I will recognize representatives of the administration to discuss the proposed LRTA program.
Thanks for letting me give you a little highlight over the LRTA district, the affordable housing LRTA district. So this presentation, some of you may have seen it and heard it before at a finance committee a couple weeks ago. So the presentation here talks about just an overview of it, like a historic overview of how long we've had LRTA in the city, affordable housing need, what are our needs for that, the proposal itself, the map and the exemption schedule, affordable housing fund, and the impacts of investment projects, and then conclusionary remarks. So,
I'm sorry, Ms. Rosemary, can you just introduce yourself for the record and for the members of the public?
Sorry about that. I'm Tina Roseberry, and I work with Alicia Corner in the Department of Community and Economic Development, and I also work in quite a bit with affordable housing here in the city.
Thank you.
Okay. So the LRTA in Pennsylvania here was enacted in 77, but here in the city, we enacted our first LRTA in 1984. And then since then, we've had several iterations and amendments and expansions to districts in 86, 91, and 2012 for the North Side, South Side, and Central Business District. So the new proposal that we're talking about here tonight really does consider a lot of different things that went into creating the language and the different components of it. So the downturn in office development was a big thing to consider as part of why the proposal is written the way it is. The continued large industrial warehousing, the substantial need for more housing, let alone affordable housing. Substantial increases in housing costs and the lack of affordable housing. So I just thought it was important for everyone to kind of hear about the affordable housing need here in the city. So if we looked at a couple statistics here, so 46% of the city is, the population is low to moderate income. So anytime you see that LMI, that means low to moderate income. And 48% of the city's households make less than $50,000 in here in the city. So annually, over from the period of 2009 to 2015, there's a rent increase of somewhere around 4%. So over that period of time between 2009 and 2015, there was a rent increase of approximately around 18%. I did look at some statistics just from last year, like 15 months ago till today, and supposedly that increase just in the last year and a half was 10 to 11%. If we looked at rental units and owner-occupied, 41% of the rental units are cost burden. So that term, cost burden, that term really means that somebody who's spending more than 30% of their household's income. So 41% of all the rental units that are occupied in this city are spending more, are considered cost burden. They're spending more than 30% of their income on rental and housing costs. So it gets much lower for owner occupied, being 18%. Then I thought, you know, what's happening on our wait list for housing in this city? So somewhere around, I called the housing authority, somewhere around 2,000 people are on the wait list at the public housing authority as well. So if we had to really break it down into what is going on exactly here in the city as far as apartment sizes, average rents for a one bedroom, average rents for a two bedroom, if we had to calculate that, remember if we're talking about cost burden, that's 30% of the household income. So we have a median income right now of $45,850 for a household. So that's the median income in the city. So 30% of that income is around $1,146 per month. So already, just looking at that, there's a $350 deficit per month, just if you did the math pretty simply. So HUD utilizes, and this is something I'm also working with the city, CDBG and Home Program. So this is something that we go by, and they also do with 30% of the income. So here it is for one person, two person. This is what 80% of the median income, and also what 30% of that means, what they should be spending in that or less in housing. So when the proposal was put together for the LRTA and thinking about really honing in on the need for housing as well as affordable housing, it became clear, it sort of rose to the top, sort of rose to the, you know, as the topics of concern. So focusing on those parameters, and in an area where we did see quite a bit of parcels that were underutilized. The South Side, the district boundaries are around the South Side. It incorporates affordable housing. Tax abatement is for 10 years, and there's an establishment of an affordable housing fund. So some of the deals, the details when it comes to what is the affordable housing component of the LRTA? So compliance occurs when a developer is going to or plans to propose 10 units or more. So a dedication of 10% of those units should be affordable. Maintaining those housing costs and rents and utilities is all important as we try to reach that 30% of your gross income as being to help them to not be cost burden. So HUD published income limits and rent limits, and those limits do change every year. This year they came out, I think in March, but they were agreed upon in July. So every year, somewhere in the spring, early summer, we do get rents. So anyone participating in this process, they would be updated. And we also keep our website up to date on what the current limits are as well. So there is an option though, for compliance. So if the developer thinks, you know, this just doesn't fit within our proposal, the thing that they can do, the alternative, is to, we're creating this affordable housing fund, sort of like a fee in lieu of. So they would, you know, for a certain amount, would put money into the fund. So the I don't know if everyone can see this. Hopefully they can. We kind of changed up the mapping to make it sort of more clear if everyone wants to take a look at that. But you can see all these parcels here that have been designated are underutilized parking lots all throughout the south side here and just concentrated in that area. So planning-wise, I mean, that's a lot of parcels that are 31. It's 31.1 acres, I believe, and all those parcels equal up to that are just sitting there in parking areas. So these underutilized parking lots are all part of the properties involved and located within that LRTA district. So the county, when they're doing their assessment, if we had to look at, okay, what is the current assessment for those parcels, there's no LRTA involved. So all those parcels combined are 36,000. That's roughly what the estimated current assessment is for all those parcels. So if a tax incentive like LRTA is applied to it, the future assessment at a minimum would look like this. It'd be at a minimum of 2 million. So currently, when we're thinking about what the city is generating too, and also it relates to property taxes, the amount that we're getting is so minimal on those properties to date if they're not developed. So this is just something I threw out there on just to kind of let everyone know what the economic driver LRTA could be if it was put in place and what the assessment could look like in years to come. So I've noted before that this is a 10-year program. So everyone who wants to participate in the LRTA program, it goes through the first year, 100% of their increased assessment is exempted, and then the next year, 90% of that is exempted, the third year, 80%, and so on down to our 10th year, where it's only 10% is exempted. And then the 11th year, they're paying their full amount of assessed taxes. So the fund, the Affordable Housing Fund. So currently we have it set in the ordinance as being $25,000 per unit. And then the purpose statement that we'll keep reverting back to whenever, you know, guidelines are put around what this fund can do, what are the eligible activities, and how are those funds to be used. The purpose of it is advancing affordable housing and remediating in whole or in part deteriorated areas through a program of low interest loans, forgiveness loans. In the green here is something that was added, and or rental assistance to persons of low, very low, and extremely low income as determined by HUD. So future spending is focused on increasing long-term affordability here in the city of these homes. So the uses of funds, we could, and those grants or loans could be used on acquisition, housing rehab, fees associated with design and acquisition, as well as rental subsidies. So the guidelines, although they're not anything in concrete, we believe because the market changes, the guidelines probably should be looking at, you know, being flexible as we can for what the city needs and in cooperation with what the developer needs as well. They should be viewed as a viable source. Sometimes with HUD's home and CDBG programs, there's a lot of parameters around those funds. But if we have this affordable housing fund, maybe we're able to bridge the gap with some of the financing needs for affordable housing projects. So I guess in conclusion, I just really wanted to talk about the LRTA is a strong incentive. It continues to be a strong incentive, both in the cities and other cities right in this overall general area. I know Easton amended their LRTA in 2018 to look at and focus on underutilized properties as well. Lancaster City in 2020, although it hasn't been approved, their LRTA proposal is also on affordable housing. And then State College, and since 2019, has had affordable housing be a part of their LIRTA as well, and they're focusing on the reuse of historic properties in conjunction with affordable housing. So the LIRTA is widely used. It's a responsible tool for redevelopment for underutilized properties, so we can, it still continues to be an effective economic development tool, and we're hoping to, you know, wrap this around affordable housing in the future. So I'm here to take any questions. I guess you'll open up to any public comment that might be.
Thank you, Ms. Roseberry. Is there any other comments from the members of the administration or your department that you wanted to make before I turn to council?
I don't think so. I have Darlene Heller with me here tonight, just in case there's some questions that she might be able to answer with the city's planning prior to me getting here to the city. So if there's any questions, her and I will be on the ready to answer those.
Thank you. At this point, I'll turn to members of council for any questions or comments. Ms. Negron?
Thank you, President Walden. So you mentioned a couple of municipalities close by us that are using the LIRTA and including affordable housing in it. Are they also doing the fee in lieu for $25,000?
Well, State College's fees are based on a formula, and their fees are not the same as ours, but they do have a fee in lieu of, yes.
What is their fee?
Well, I think I have some. It really depends on the formula for State College. Oh. So they have a formula.
Okay, so it's really different from place.
So and every development will change depending on the size of the lot, the amount of units that they're building, the assessed value of it.
How about Easton or Lancaster, the others that you mentioned? Do you know if they have 25,000 specific number?
No, it's not the same as what we're proposing here. This is something that is unique to here, but there are other, and State College also has inclusionary zoning as well, which we do not here. So they have several tools for affordable housing, and they sit in a different spot because there's just so much college housing there.
Sure. All right, that's all I have. Thank you.
Mr. Reynolds?
A question is, do Allentown or Easton have, do they have their LIRTAs or any economic development incentives that are tied to anything with affordable housing?
No, not to my knowledge.
So I think that this is, what we were told last time is that we were the first people necessarily to tie, in the Lehigh Valley at least, to tie our economic development incentives in LIRTA to something like affordable housing.
Right, okay. You're correct.
All right, okay, thank you. That's it for now.
Ms. Graham-Smith?
If I could just answer Councilman DeVoe's question for State College, they do have mandatory inclusionary zoning, and their fee in lieu varies, but the average is $129,000 per unit. So it is high, though, because it is
a lot. That's
yeah. I just thank you for the great presentation. I just had a question. Do you know of any other municipalities that are using or attaching a fee in lieu of with the LIRTA? Lancaster?
For affordable housing?
For affordable housing, right.
Like I said, Lancaster is only proposing it. They're sitting in a sort of similar. They are also proposing to introduce some type of formula, but they've been going round and round about that. That's the piece that they can't seem to solidify, the formula aspect of it. So we've looked at it, and we've utilized a methodology, and then taken into consideration some of the things that sit underneath the soil that could be, you know, tough for development to even get off the ground, things that have been stored underneath these parking lots for years.
Do you have any idea at what Lancaster's looking at, like ballpark figures or what kind of formula? No?
Okay. No, and you know, since the pandemic, they're kind of short-staffed, so I had a hard time reaching out to them.
Okay, thank you. We had spoken about the 25,000 at the last meeting, but I just feel that given what some other municipalities are getting under the inclusionary zoning ordinance, they're getting a lot more. But I feel like, as I said, we really need to do a formula, and I like the formula that you used under the affordability of HUD, where you get up with the $42,450 per unit. I think that's a lot. It's still not as much as I would like to see, but it's a lot better than the $25,000. So I would like us to consider that and maybe talk about that later on. And in addition to that, I think it would be important to do like a 5% increase per year to reflect the increase in rentals every year, which has really gone from 4 to really 18%, but a 5 may be, you know, a good kind of number to go with. So thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Kwong?
Thank you, Mr. Waldron. Can you just elaborate on that 42,000 number that Ms. Cramsey Smith just alluded to? Was that in the
presentation? It was the memo that was sent out to council on...
For the record, is there any insight you could give us to the how that 42,000 number was calculated, you or Ms. Heller? Ms. Heller?
Yeah.
Just for those in attendance to follow along.
Ms. Carter's with us as well online. I think she's ready to jump in.
Okay. My apologies for not being there in person. The 42,000 that Ms. Cramsey Smith is referencing is using the affordability gap method. So what you take is the price, the market rate rent that would be charged for a property. You subtract the affordability dollars, like, you know, if it's one person in a one bedroom, what's the HUD affordability price point on that 30% for the rent? And then multiplying that over the life of the LERTA is where $42,000 is generated. And so it's really an affordability gap method that was discussed at a prior finance committee meeting, but I had included that in a memo sent to council in advance, I think, at the last meeting, just as a little bit of background and to offer a, you know, a formula in generating a fee for the LERTA.
Thank you, Ms. Carter. Those are my only questions.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
I'm sorry. I just have another question for Mrs. Carter. Regarding that $1,500, which is the average market rent, is that considered for a one bedroom in the affordability gap?
Yes. So that was a one bedroom unit, and we were looking predominantly at the newer units that have come online, you know, to generate an average or a, you know, the average market rate rent, and then making the assumption there's one person living in a one bedroom, looking at what the caps would be on their rental or on their, you know, based on their income, were the figures that were used.
And for the LERTA proposals, do we have any idea if we're looking at one or two bedrooms at this point, or is that something that's going to be determined later?
There was nothing that we included in the proposal that would require, you know, what that would be, you know, whether or not we would require all one bedrooms or a percentage of one or two bedroom units. I was really trying to simplify, I guess, just the formula so that we could use it as an example.
Thank you.
Dr. Van Hoort?
Thank you. I just had a couple basic questions about kind of the conception of what we're dealing with here. One is, when we had previously talked about approving the building on New Street, there were to be some affordable units included, and I understood that, unfortunately, those units didn't have any windows. And I was wondering, are we going to, if we do allow the builder to incorporate 10% of these units as affordable, are we going to mandate that they are the same size and quality as the other units? Like, I don't think that these affordable units should be small, cramped closets without windows. And I just wonder what kind of standards we're going to have for the construction of these affordable units.
But just as a point of clarification, there were no units that had no windows in the South New Street project.
Good. All right.
I know that was mentioned, but in the plans that I've seen, that was not part of the incorporated design.
I'm glad to hear that.
There was an accusation that maybe windows were not, they were in the bedroom versus being in the living room as well. And that is true for that project. But every unit had, you know, windows. When talking with the development community, frankly, they're not interested in reducing the quality of specific units. It is the standardization that helps them, whether that's for appliances, whether that's for, you know, like fixtures or countertops. Because I talked about with some developers whether or not it is incentive to allow them to make the quality a little lower in some of the units to bring more affordability, you know, to these new marker units. And the response I'm getting is that the standardization is important. Not to mention that they're not going to pick a unit and say, you know, that is reserved for a specific price point. It's easier for them to have the flexibility, particularly when people sign leases and then let's say they change jobs, they see an increase in, you know, in their income. They want the flexibility of having a variety of units to meet that qualification of affordability, for that requirement of affordability.
Well, and I would add to that, though, too, that so if somebody's moving out of an apartment, that affordable unit, they could call it like floating. It could be anywhere in those buildings, because all of a sudden there could be several people moving out and moving in. So sometimes I think that unit may not be the same unit as it was in years two and three. They could be five units, you know, somewhere else in the building as people are moving in, moving out. If they're one bedroom or two bedroom, if an affordable family needs a two bedroom and a two bedroom's open, they might then switch those up. I'd imagine they'll change over a 10-year period.
And as much as I trust and am reassured by both of your assessments, I do think having language in this that assures that these units are as healthy and as light-filled as the other units are, is important, because without the language, I don't think we have a guarantee. My second question is, what happens to these affordable units at the end of 10 years?
Well, I mean, Paige, that's a very good question. I imagine that's a conversation with a variety of the developers utilizing and taking advantage of LRTA, that when we know that when that date's occurring, and we will at the city, we'll know that, having some conversations there for longer-term affordability. This is one step, and I think Grace mentioned that this is, you know, about the fees or whatever, but we're hoping to make affordable housing more of a multi-pronged a solution to, you know, a much bigger initiative, that this is one piece of the pie that could help for increase affordable units, let alone other things that we're, you know, doing with CDBG and home funds as well.
To be sure, I mean, 10 years of affordable housing is a merit in and of itself, without a doubt, but I also, the thought of them evaporating after 10 years also gives me pause. My third question really has to do almost with the whole philosophy of what we're doing here. So this is the proposed LRTA boundaries. Do you know what percentage of this is not residentially zoned?
I believe
roughly.
I believe it's all in the IR, correct?
Yeah, it's all either zoned CB or IR. So they allow commercial, mixed use, and residential.
Right. And so I guess one of my questions is, why are we limiting it to an industrial zone? I understand that we have parcels that we'd like to develop, but also I think a lot of the, you know, people, I very much believe in infill housing, and to extend the LRTA boundaries out into residential zones where we could have small mom and pop construction, building a lot of little small four units in these infill, and it also eliminates the risk of what we're, you know, being told is of all the what lies beneath, you know, all the bad industrial stuff that may lie beneath all these industrial lots is one of the reasons we even have the LRTA. So it would seem to me that if we were really trying to encourage a lot of infill housing to stabilize our neighborhoods, we would look at pulling these boundaries out into the residential neighborhoods, particularly those that have higher rates of blight and foreclosure and things like that.
So if I may comment there, I will say we do have a large residential LRTA that we put forward in 2017 for the north side. It mirrors the north side 2027 boundaries, and at the time we weren't sure, because it's not usual to have a LRTA program covering a residential district, at least not for the city of Bethlehem. And we very much wanted to see what the response from the community would be to do exactly that, whether it was increasing square footage on their existing properties, adding a unit, infill development, and have tried to offer what equates to about a 40% tax abatement. Ours is a little higher in that instance, and the county and school districts are at the 50%. Our abatement is actually a little, it's at 10% as opposed to the 50 that the others. And frankly, we're not generating the activity that we were hoping to see. We continue to market it. We continue to let people know there's an opportunity here. We don't have the requirement that it include affordable, but it's a lucrative incentive in a largely residential district. And frankly, when we come back to give the report to council at the end of that term, I'm not sure that we're going to see the results that we were hoping for in those areas.
But the abatement on this program is more aggressive, right? It's 100%, 90%, et cetera, over 10 years. Is that different than what you have there?
50% in total is the way we describe it, Dr. Member. But what the other one is, it's in the low 40s because it's 50% of both the school district and the county. Ours is a little higher because we're contributing, our abatement is lower because we're contributing general fund dollars to the Northside 2027 effort. So, yes. It is a little bit more aggressive, not a lot more, but again, the comparable development, based on the change in that, it just doesn't for sure.
I would also argue that the engine of development in the South Side right now is much hotter and running much faster than perhaps North Side is, and that consideration of including residential neighborhoods should still be done, because I think there's value in infill, and I think there's value in small construction, and there's value in rehab, and I just don't see why we wouldn't include that as well. My final comment is I really very much agree with Ms. Cramsey Smith that $25,000 to me A felt arbitrary, but also B is not nearly enough. And while I don't feel that the $42,000 is necessarily adequate, it would be a good start, especially with a 5% increase every year to offset inflation and rental increase prices that we've already seen happen. That's all my comments. Thank you very much. Thank you for your answers.
Mr. Reynolds?
Yeah, I just want to make a couple comments. One is, obviously, Bethlehem, since the closing of Bethlehem Steel, I mean, one of the things that separated us from other communities is our ability to redevelop and revitalize, and that's been tied to our economic incentives in many ways. But up until a couple years ago, we didn't really have as many metrics to necessarily track how successful they were. One of the things that we had done in council after I introduced a couple years ago was the FAIR ordinance, which helps to track how many jobs and tax dollars are created by those particular economic development incentives. This is the first time that we are tying anything like affordable housing to any type of economic development incentive. And East and Allentown are not doing that, and I think it's something that we can't get lost here as far as how important that is. I think that when we take a look at this, one of the things that we talked about last meeting is what we're able to mandate and what we're not able to mandate. And when you talk about the affordability gap, obviously that is a number that seems as if, it could be a good payment in lieu of or a fee in lieu of and things like that. But one of the things we talked about last time is how if we're going to offer somebody this incentive of LURDA, that we can give them options, but we can't necessarily say you need to do A. And one of the things that we need to do is we need to think as the three options that are in here, either a payment in lieu of, you're paying or you're offering 10% of your units affordable, which is that federal designation of affordable, 80% of income, or the third one is to build units off-site. One of the things that we have to do on this side of the table is think is which of those three options do we want the developer to pick? We don't have the leverage just to say, like, you are going to do this or you're not going to build the project. So when we're talking about those three options, we're thinking about which do we think is the best for the issue of affordable housing, and how do we make the developer necessarily pick that? And I know that it gets a little bit confusing and counterintuitive there, but one of the things that also was brought up last time is if you're taking a look at 80% of the median income, and what that means as far as the percentage, and I'm estimating these numbers a little bit, but if you're looking at $1,500 in rent and $1,200 is 80% of the median income, like, in all honesty, I don't believe that helping that person who probably has a decent job with that $300 gap is the best use of affordable housing funds. For me, it is the fee, and I don't think it's close as far as the issue of affordable housing. Because one of the things you can do with the fees, you can take that and then you can direct that fee to the people that need it the most, those people that are low, moderate income, truly. And we talked about that last time as far as where the biggest gap is. And I'm sorry, you said, what, there's 2,000 people on the waiting list at Bethlehem Housing Authority? So the people that need it the most, and if you're living at one of these places and you're paying $1,200 a month in rent, you probably have a job, you're a student whose mom or dad is paying for it or whatever it might be. So the question comes down to us is how do we incentivize people to take the fee in lieu of? And how do we get to that number by which the developer is going to say, I would rather pay, let's say a developer's building 40 units, I would rather pay, you know, $100,000, $25,000 each, rather than going through that, you know, whatever the reduction is. And then the city, theoretically, is able to take that $100,000 for the first time and send it to people that actually need the help the most, and put it with our other funds that we're getting from Washington as having to do with COVID recovery and other things that we do into the future. So the big question I think we have here is not just about like what we think is the right number for the fee. I mean, if it was up to me and you didn't have to worry about anything, you mandate, you could charge $150,000, $200,000 if you thought it was going to make sure that they were going to take care of Lurda. But that's not the situation that we have in front of us. And if we make that fee too high, it becomes a disincentive to pay the fee, and then people just basically say, I'll just let four people live here. I'm not going to make it super public. I will find a way to make sure that I'm you know, fitting into the ordinance. And I don't think that is the best value as far as trying to sell affordable housing. So when we talk about how we make that bet about how much to charge the fee in lieu of, I think we need to rely on our professionals who have had those conversations. We can absolutely raise the fee. I just think a couple of years from now, when we're looking at why don't we have that money that we can send to the people that need it the most, which are those people that are truly low income, we'll look back and say like, oh, it wasn't that we were able to mandate this, but rather we have to take a look at which of these incentives we want to make the strongest because we think it fits our goal the most. So that's all I have to say for now, Mr. Waldron. Thank you.
Mr. Callahan?
Thank you, Mr. President. Ms. Reynolds, I could not agree more with everything that you just said. It's not just about providing the incentive, but it's providing an incentive that the builders or the developers are going to choose, because they have an option of not taking the Lurda and doing what they want to do over there. And one of the reasons why I voted for the project on New Street was because of the six affordable housing units that developer committed to do. So I forgot the gentleman's name a few months ago who ran the nonprofit, and he showed up at a council meeting, and his comments were that he can't compete right now in buying homes or property on the south side. He can't compete with the market rate that's over there right now. And I totally understand where he's coming from. I mean, I know so many people. Comment was made a little bit earlier about maybe having individual retirees or teachers or professionals have them do one house here or one house there. That's already being done. I mean, I can tell you right now, I know, half a dozen people that are buying homes over there, fixing them up, and that they are not using those as affordable housing. They are fixing them up, putting granite countertops in, beautiful wood floors in, just basically gutting the insides of these properties and then renting them out, and they're getting top dollar for them. So I'm for this Lurda, but I want to make it clear that I think you are 100% right, Mr. Reynolds, that we have to make sure that the right incentive is the best incentive for the developers. Otherwise, they don't take it. We don't have any affordable housing, and we don't get the in lieu of fee either. So I didn't get the lady's name that was speaking at the podium. What was your name, ma'am, again?
Tina Roseberry.
Tina, I apologize. So you had said earlier that there was an 18% rate or rental increase. What was that time period over? Was that 10 years?
2009 to 2015.
So that's over a six-year period.
Mm-hmm. 18% rents have increased, and that's about 4% a year.
And then there was another number too that you gave out that was over a year and a half. I think you said about 10%.
I was just the other day looking at it, and just like during the pandemic period, the last year and a half. So on a couple different sites, if I did the math, it was somewhere between 10 and 11% just in the last year and a half that the rents have increased. So a majority of it has increased just recently. It's a recent, this 18, to get to the 18%, a lot of the rent hikes happened recently.
Yeah, I, you know, the reason why I asked is because I know it's not 100% the contributing factor, but if you look over the last year and a half, our taxes went up 5% last year, and I think over the last maybe 6 years, I think if you add up all the tax increases, it's probably like a 10 or 11% tax increase. And I say this all the time during budget hearings, and I'll say it again in this November. Every time we raise taxes, the landlords, of which I am, and I know a lot of other people that are landlords, they do not eat that cost. If their costs go up, I don't care if it's taxes, the water bill, a stormwater runoff fee, county taxes, school district taxes, city taxes, when their taxes go up and their costs go up, they don't eat that. They bought this property for an investment property, and they're not going to lose money. So what they do is they then pass that on to the renter. And I don't know why everybody can't understand that concept, but every time we get to the budget season, that is a reason why I'm fighting so much against raising taxes. And I've said it for probably the last 7 years. Every time we raise rents, that's a cost that goes on to the people who can least afford it, you know. Every time we raise rents, we become kind of like a little mini New York City in the Lehigh Valley. I don't know of another area in the Lehigh Valley that's more expensive to live and rent than Bethlehem. And so I know a lot of people. I teach at Northeast Middle School. Unfortunately, I knew a lot of kids, probably 5-6 kids this year in the middle school district. They moved, and it was because they just, their parents, lost a job, or for whatever reasons, and then they couldn't afford to find, another property to live in, and they moved to, somewhere in Allentown or somewhere in East, in the West Ward. And that happened 5 or 6 times this, this school year. So I think that the $25,000 fee is reasonable. I don't think it's too high. I don't think it's too low. I agree with Mr. Reynolds that if we do make it really high, let's say we double it, you make it $25,000, that will probably, in all likelihood, cause many of the developers not to take the LRTA incentive. And now we're back to square one. So I think that if you really look at the situation, I think that the best thing for the city and for affordable housing is that we make it an attractive thing for the developers to do and participate in, and we take that $25,000 and we put that in a fund towards affordable housing, and then hopefully within 5-6 years we have a substantial amount of money to use for affordable housing units within the city. So I just had one other comment. A little earlier, someone was making a comment about bedrooms not having windows. You by law, and Ms. Carter, correct me if I'm wrong, but by law, you cannot have a bedroom without a window, correct?
Well, that's a code question that I don't know that I have the answer to. I know you have to have different means of accessing the property, whether or not it's got to be through a window versus a door, that I'm not sure. But you absolutely do need exit and entry, points.
Yeah, I'm almost 100% by law you cannot have a bedroom without a window. So I just wanted to make sure that everybody understood that. I hope this goes through. I want everybody also to understand that this where these properties are, there is a great risk to these developers to find things that they have no idea that are there. Don't quote me on the number, but from what I remember on the 510 Flats property, when they started doing the excavation, they ran into literally a live gas line, which no one knew was there. It wasn't on the blueprints. And I forgot how much money in remediation that cost, but I think there was somewhere between $600,000 and $800,000 to remediate that problem. And that's it. That's a substantial cost to the developer. And I just want everybody to know that when they start digging on these properties, on these maps, we have no idea what they're going to find here. And neither do they. So I hope this works. I applaud the people that brought this forward. Ms. Carner, if you brought it forward in your department, I applaud this. I think it's a good thing for the city. I think it's a great thing for people that are in need of housing, affordable housing. I think it's a win-win for everybody. It's a win for the city, it's a win for low-income residents of the city, and it's a win-win for the developer. So I'm going to be 100% in support of this. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Callahan. I would just add that I think the role of government is to help as many people as possible, including those that are most vulnerable and need the most support. And I think what this legislation does is it attempts to do that. This is something that no other municipality has done in the Lehigh Valley before when tying LRTA to affordable housing. And I think that's an excellent thing. It creates a precedent, not only for Bethlehem, but other municipalities. We don't know exactly what that magic number is, the 25,000. I would leave that to professionals to try to figure that out, because it is about that balancing act of trying to make sure that the developers are taking that option to have affordable housing and not paying out of it. So I think that, as former Councilwoman Karen Dolan always said, don't let perfect be the enemy of good. I think this is a positive legislation that I would support when it comes time to a vote. I'd like to see it move forward in order to try to help those vulnerable population in the city and try to provide a little bit more support to those who need it the most. Are there any other comments or questions from council this evening? Thank you. At this point in our public hearing, I will turn to members of the public who have a comment specifically on the proposed LRTA legislation in front of us. We will have another opportunity for public comment on other subjects in short order. Is there anyone in the public who would like to comment with a 5-minute time limit on the LRTA? Yes.
Good evening, and thank you for the opportunity to address council this evening. My name is Anna Smith. I live at 631 Ridge Street in South Bethlehem. So I had the opportunity to attend the Finance Committee meeting where this proposal was first discussed and share some thoughts and ask some questions. And as I stated at that meeting, I think that tying economic development incentives to affordable housing requirements is a great step in the right direction. I commend the members of the administration and council members who've advocated for this policy, which I think is one small component of implementing a broad range of interconnected strategies to improve housing access, quality, and affordability in our community. I'd also like to thank Ms. Carner for her memo addressing many of the questions that arose at the Finance Committee meeting. I will admit that I was a bit surprised to see the exact same proposal move forward to council, since it seemed clear to me, at least at the committee meeting, that a majority of council members present had asked for a clear data-driven formula to determine in-lieu payments for developers who choose not to include affordable units within their projects. At the time, staff had indicated that the $25,000 in-lieu payment included in the proposal had not been calculated using any formula, but rather was a number that developers in the community were comfortable with and that the mayor had agreed to. That may have changed since then. Like many members of council, I believe that the $25,000 per unit amount is too low and inflexible and does not take into account the best practices, which were highlighted in a publication by the Urban Institute that I had the opportunity to share with several members of council that describe how to implement a clear formula that's calculated on a per project basis, like in many of the other communities throughout our state and country. And which would take into consideration the specific conditions of each development and the current housing market, including average rental prices and unit sizes. While the administration has provided an example of what one such calculation could look like using the affordability gap method, which I'd suggested at that meeting, they continue to recommend a static fee that is substantially lower than their own fairly conservative calculation, which I actually want to address in a moment. If this number, 25,000, is not already irrelevant, it would quickly become so given the rate at which rental prices are increasing in our community, the 4% a year that Ms. Roseberry referred to. So I did want to address specifically the number of 42,000, which is based on a calculation of the market price of a one-bedroom apartment, $1,500, minus what would essentially be the fair rental price at 30% of the income of a single individual living in that apartment. I hope Ms. Rosemary or Ms. Carner will correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding was that those rents that would be charged to a single individual would be capped at fair market rent. At least that was my experience having worked with affordable housing programs in the past, and the fair market rent in the Lehigh Valley for a one-bedroom apartment is $891, in which case, if we were to calculate $1,500 minus $891 to have a clear indication of what the difference in cost to the developer on a monthly basis of maintaining an affordable unit would be, that comes out to $609 for a one-bedroom apartment, which multiplied by the 10-year period comes out to $73,000. And I may be wrong, and I just wanted to confirm that if fair market rent is the maximum cap on what an individual who is living in an affordable unit can pay, that that would be the calculation. When doing the similar calculation for a two-bedroom apartment, which is the most common thing that we're seeing in most of these parcels here, that would be $1,725 as the average price for a two-bedroom apartment, minus the number that Ms. Rosemary had provided, which is also quite similar to fair market rent for a two-bedroom, $1,139. That comes out to a difference of $586 a month for the developer, which when multiplied by the 10-year period comes out to $70,000. So it's actually a fairly consistent number here. I'm advocating for a formula that would be calculated differently for every project, but it does seem like $70,000 seems to be reoccurring here. I think it's important because while I absolutely agree with Mr. Reynolds that an in-lieu payment is a great thing and a way to transfer money to the folks who are most in need, I do think $25,000 is just way too far away from that kind of inflection point of where a developer is going to be making the decision of whether or not to include units or to pay an in-lieu fee. And so in conclusion, I guess I'll just say that I think it's really, really important that we get our numbers right, that we look at formulas, and that we use a data-driven approach in order to maximize the impact of this proposal so that we can have the greatest impact on affordable housing for our community. And thank you all for your work on this. Thank you all for your support for this proposal. And I look forward to seeing it advance and ultimately be approved. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Smith. Is there anyone else who would like to make comment on the proposed order? Yes, sir.
Thank you. I'm Tom Shantz. I'm owner of the Steel Ice Center. And as you can see, I'm pretty much affected with this district. I have an agreement of sale here that says I had to build 250 spots, whether it's underutilized or overutilized, as in the last 2 weeks. I think it's a great program and everything. I think it's wrong. I don't know how I've been going to get clarity on my parking lot for 15 years, and I can't get it from anyone, from city council. Per city code, I needed 250 spots built before I could buy the land, and we did. Now, from what I'm looking at is I could lose my parking lot. Well, if you own a business, you know there's two vital things, customers and parking. And this would eliminate my parking. So I don't know where they're proposing they're gonna put 250 spots, because we're the original builders down there. So my group paid for that parking, never got reimbursed. And you know, no one else on that property, on the Bethworks property, paid for any parking except us. Contributed to the TIF tax for all 18 years since we've been open, and it's for reimbursements of parking lots and infrastructure. Well, that's a parking lot. Hooven Mason Trestle and PNC Plaza all got the TIF money. I didn't get reimbursed. So for me to be nervous about seeing this map show up online, you don't even understand. Shuts me down. So if a developer wants to develop on that, I would suggest they try to buy Steel Ice Center at the same time so I can close and get out of town. Because that's what you're doing. Underutilized lots in there, if you see those lots, and a lot of those lots there are probably coded for what ArtsQuest needs, what casino needs are, so they're not underutilized. It's per code. You know, I didn't build 250 spots in 2003 because I hardly had anybody skating. Now I have 23 youth teams playing out of my facility. I got a geezer league, sorry if you're over 35, but I have a geezer league that skates Sunday nights from 3 on both rinks, all 3 to 11. So it's not underutilized. If I go by a Lowe's store at 6 a.m., guess what? It's underutilized. So why don't you build it out at the Lowe's? Do you know what I mean? And I do. I believe in the project. I believe in helping everybody. You know, that Steel Ice Center was built with our money, not public money. We don't want to use public money. We don't want to go that route. We used our funds. Our funds paid for that parking lot. And I can also attest to, once you start building on there, you don't know what you're going to find. Because it cost us another $750,000 when we put the shovels in the ground. We went down 20 feet to the front by the pro shop to get clean fill. We found barrels. We found you don't know what you're going to find, like Mr. Callahan said. But I do like the project. I do want to help everybody. I'm all about everybody. I will teach people to skate in affordable housing or unaffordable housing. I don't care. We want everybody to come and enjoy the place. But without that parking lot, I'm done. I want to thank you, and I say good luck.
Is there anyone else who would like to make comment on the proposed LERTA? Mr. Grubb?
Daniel Grubb, 2420 Henderson Place. The development of clean, safe, affordable housing is integral to the health of every community. So it's nice to see some effort being made to address this crucial need in the Southside LERTA areas, although, in reference to what Tom just mentioned, I would question the inclusion of not only that parcel, but possibly some others over there, since they support much of what happens at both the Steel Ice Center and Steel Stacks. Although the initiative is welcomed, I think it falls short. Why only 10% of the units in projects of 10 or more housing units? Why not make it incremental, depending on the number of housing units proposed? Why only 25,000, which I think that message has come through loud and clear. The payment should be based on statistical analysis, not a developer feeling comfortable with 25,000. Why not require that the amount be adjusted annually to allow for market forces and inflation? Once again, in Bethlehem, it seems some are more concerned with appeasing developers than the community they've been elected to serve. How comfortable housing developers feel with the payment in lieu should be the farthest thing from any public official's mind. Imagine how uncomfortable it is for families looking to find a home or an apartment that they can afford in Bethlehem. So, instead of passing the responsibility off to others, it would be nice if the developers would actually incorporate affordable housing units. And I just want to make an observation too. I read or heard about a comment that was made by an elected official that the same 8 people are showing up raising this issue. And at one time there was the STP term, same 10 people showing up at council meetings to express their concerns. First, those residents need to be thanked, not mocked. Second, if 8 are showing up, you can bet they're representing and speaking on behalf of many more. And finally, I would remind council that you are the same 7 people at these meetings. and nobody's mocking you. Thank you.
Is there anyone else who'd like to make comment? Mr. Sharp?
Bill Shire, 1898. I just have two minor statistical comments on the first one being I was struck by the statistic that 48% of the city make or fall below the median income of some roughly $50,000. And that made me think back to the discussion on the new building on New Street and the affordable units, which I understood would be $1,300 a month, and using the 30% rule, it would translate to an income of $50,000 a year. So what that would mean is that 48% of the city will not be able to afford to live in the affordable units on New Street. And my other comment is just it's probably just a typo, but if something increases 18% over a 6-year period without compounding, that's 3% per year, not 4. And if it's 4% a year, again without compounding, for the whole period it's 24%, not 18%. I'm sure it was just a typo. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Shire. The proposed bill creating the LURTA program will be on tonight's council agenda for first reading. Second reading of the bill and passage of the resolution is anticipated for September 7th council meeting. The public hearing is adjourned. Seeking approval of minutes for July 6th and August 3rd. If there are no comments from members of council, the minutes stand approved. Moving to public comment on any subject not being voted on this evening. One name previously signed up on the list, Mr. Caratola. After that, I'll open it up to anyone else in the room who'd like to make comment.
Hi, my name is Arthur Caratola, 813 Lawford Street, Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. My email is ARTIE, my last name, Caratola, CURATOLA, dot, night is a nighttime, NIGHT, of the arts, at gmail.com. I'd like to state that if you know people that have music recorded that's about world peace, original, get it to me before September 10th. It'll be internationally showed on September 21st. I am the representative in the Lehigh Valley area that will be doing the putting together of the section of the Lehigh Valley of Pennsylvania in the United States. It's going out through Ganja, Africa, Italy, all over. Even though ArtsQuest says that I'm not good enough to perform anywhere at Music Fest or any venues, not even for free, I was accepted by the World Peace Organization, by Wake Up, Rise Up, to have my music played and be the spokesman for the Lehigh Valley, for this thing. So, anyway, I've been promoting live original acts with artists playing and selling their artwork in the buildings, lobbies of theaters, and outside on the grounds way before ArtsQuest and Music Fest rolled with my idea from the Night of the Arts shows that I did and I presented at NACAC and the Roxy Theater in Northampton in 1977, having 35 acts perform on one stage in the amphitheater, 7 different stages, I should say, in one area. I never took percentage from artists selling their works at my venues. ArtsQuest does, but they're a nonprofit. I never discriminated upon certain talented artists selling their work or distributing promotional material or certain performing artists performing at any of my venues. Arts Quest does. Then again, I'm not greedy. I'm walking right with God. I truly don't believe that the heads of Arts Quest believe in the same God that you and I do. I appear that their God is money. They get exemptions and perks from the city and the state as a non-profit organization. Yet they all ride around in new expensive cars and are very well off with the money that they rake in from their supporters, the taxpayers. ArtsQuest runs Music Fest and appears to run the city of Bethlehem. We, the taxpayers, gave them the key to the city. I plus others feel that they have overstepped their bounds. They restrict entertainment bookers and promoters from handing out their business cards on their property because it's obvious they don't want competition from others booking, others who book and promote artists. But they're nonprofit. They want total demand, total control of the performing arts and all acts within the area of Allentown, Bethlehem, and Easton. They're sort of like Hitler, who wanted to control the world, only they're working on a smaller scale. Control the music and the arts in and around the Lehigh Valley. If we let them, they'll grow beyond that. It appears that they avoided working with one of the top entertainment agencies in the valley called Media 5 and will not work with anyone who books entertainment at all. You can't promote your entertainment if you're doing something like that. Try it. Even from the city, you want to do something like that. You can't do it on their grounds, even though it's our city. Cannot promote on the grounds of ArtsQuest. But anyway, ArtsQuest is going to be the Lehigh Valley. I'm with the World Peace Organization. I'm also with Wake Up Rise Up Productions that's been accepted by the United Nations. Check into it. See if I'm lying. Have a blessed day. I hope we can do something about this nonprofit organization and get them to pay money back into the city of Bethlehem and the state of Pennsylvania. God bless you.
Yes, sir.
Good evening. My name is Leonardo Rodriguez. Everybody know me like Indio. A boxing trainer. I've been doing it for a lot of years. A lot of kids fighting in Showtime, ESPN, kids from the street. Today they fighting ESPN, Showtime, and Junior Olympics. And right now, about 6 months ago, somebody bought the building. They were training the kids out of the streets. And I don't have no place to train the kids. So I'm looking for help to try to get this kid. I'm talking about 60, 70 kids every day. A lot of parents calling me, a lot of parents worry about it because the kids don't have nothing to do. And like I always say, except the gun to take over the kids, I like to hold the kids. So I'm only asking for a place that we can continue to train these kids. That's all. Come today to ask for help.
Understood. Thank you, sir. Mr. Reynolds?
Thank you, Mr. Waldron. I want to thank Mr. Rodriguez for coming today, who's obviously a respected member of our community that a lot of us know. And you know, I attended the Housing Authority meeting last week, which was a Zoom meeting with Mr. Rodriguez. He had a couple people with the Housing Authority have reached out about maybe potentially allowing Mr. Rodriguez to use a building that's currently unused, that's Housing Authority for this, for his boxing gym, which is, and his just history of helping people in our community is a connection that no one else has in this room. And you know, I got to know Mr. Rodriguez down at the YMCA down the street for many years, and he helps people out. And, you know, one of the things that I said to him last week was, and I know we see a couple of reporters here, here's a great story for you, is that this guy right here has helped out probably hundreds of kids in the Lehigh Valley that nobody else was able to get to. And through no fault of his own, he had to leave his building. And now he is trying to find a building in the city of Bethlehem. And he has respected attorneys that are helping him out. Attorneys that we all know because of what Mr. Rodriguez has brought to our community. And he's a very humble guy, but he has his fighters that fought on ESPN. They have fought all over the place. And he's not trying to make any money from this. And I think that one of the things that I told Mr. Rodriguez, I know others have told him, is he just needs to tell that story. And I guess I would just finish Mr. Waldron by saying is it's on all of us as a community to help out Mr. Rodriguez. You know, if we had more time, I could tell you some of the issues that I think, you know, maybe the Housing Authority could have found a way through to help out Mr. Rodriguez. But he is one of the most optimistic people I know, and I appreciate Mr. Rodriguez coming here today. And I'm guessing some of us, you know, some of your fans have come with you. But this is something I think is our community's responsibility, because Mr. Rodriguez has had a lot of different locations where don't have any heat, don't have any air conditioning, limited bathrooms, because he just wants a place to give his kids an opportunity to fight and learn discipline. So I know, as I said to Mr. Rodriguez, it's a personal priority of mine, and I know the people that are behind this table that are sitting behind you as well are all good people that, you know, we'll all also find a way to try to reach out to help out as we go forward. So thank you, Mr. Rodriguez, for coming.
Is there anyone else who would like to make comment? Yes. Your name?
I'm Johanna. I was the second person.
I thought you spoke at the committee meeting.
Well, you were told we could speak to the council board for 7 minutes on the stage.
Sure, if you'd like to. I saw your name on this list, and I thought that your comments were for the committee meeting.
Good evening. My name is Jeff Hutwalker. I live at 1819 Maple Street in Bethlehem. I'm a civil engineer registered in the state of Pennsylvania. The reason I'm here is on an initiative over trees in our neighborhood. I live in the Edgeboro neighborhood, and what kicked this off was that we saw about 29 pink dots that were painted on the curbs adjacent to trees. We became very concerned when one of our neighbors had their four of their trees removed, cut down, and new sidewalks put in and so forth at a considerable cost. We were very concerned that work was going to proceed up Maple Street and Elm Street. My understanding is from the city that that paving will happen for both Maple Street and Elm Street in the spring of next year, 2022. So we were all very concerned about it, so we started making inquiries with the city, and they told us that those trees are being reviewed for in the planning stage right now, and that they may or may not have to be removed. I did talk to about five people within the city, Basil, who is the chief engineer, and David Schaefer, who is the forester, talked to me, and they assured me that they had re-reviewed all of the trees that had been painted, on the curbs, and said that they would be, there was only two that would have to be removed, and I think the director here has said that that's now gone down to one tree, which is very good. The whole neighborhood was canvassed to see how they supported this initiative, and we have over 120 signatures right now from the people in our neighborhood supporting saving the trees. But the common theme we saw as we were canvassing for the signatures was that they were really more concerned about the tree safety and being left in place as opposed to optimal paving conditions when the streets are paved. So people were willing to sacrifice that in the name of saving their trees. So we looked at, I am looking at some alternate means that could be used for addressing tree issues, because quite honestly, these are very mature trees. They're about 100 years old, and there was not enough space allowed for them when they were originally planted. So that is part of the problem that the city is dealing with and we are dealing with. So we're looking at things like flexible pavement, curving the sidewalks around the tree roots so that they can be saved and accommodate the tree growth, and also maybe doing the paving in a way that's, you know, not detrimental to the roots, coming up to them but not having to cut them. So we'd also like to see that the owners are consulted, and I think we were assured by the director that they will be, to have the option, because basically on whether the trees are removed, because the owners have to pay for that removal, and if you're going to pay for it, you should be the one making the decision. So also the city is part of, has a climate change initiative, and it's been well documented that mature trees remove a lot of carbon dioxide from the air and add oxygen, which is really needed in our cities, and it also helps to keep them very much cooler. So to that end, in order to increase better communication, we wanted to propose a meeting that would occur maybe sometime in the near future at the Edgeboro Moravian Church. We could probably set that up with the church pretty easily, and then have someone from the city represented to ask questions from people in the neighborhood. And that's how we'd like to move forward. So that's it. Thank you.
My name is Johanna Brown, I live at 1727 Elm Street. I'm not going to read the whole thing I read before, I'm sure you'll be glad to hear that. But, you know, I do want to address a couple things I was not able to address earlier. And that is how these things are decided. As I said earlier, recently the owners of a property at the corner of Hamilton and Maple were forced to have four trees removed, one in Hamilton, three on Maple. The cost of this was over $18,000. This was due to a complaint about their sidewalks from someone, and I'll get to that in a minute. But one of our neighbors called the Forest Trust, told these owners wanted to have the trees removed. That was not really quite the whole story. My understanding is that the owners were and continue to be quite upset. They did not want to remove the trees, but did so because they were given no other option in order to fix their sidewalks, about which there was a complaint. A further fact, many of the people in our neighborhood are retired and cannot afford the cost of thousands of dollars as would be required in the case of any tree slated to be removal. And it's, I don't think that's only true in our neighborhood. I think that's probably true throughout the city. So let me touch on those complaints. The only time sidewalks are repaired in the city is if the owner opts to do so or someone complains, right? This can be anyone. I mean, there isn't a situation where people go out and assess the quality of the sidewalks and say, oh, this one has to be repaired, and gives people time to do it. That doesn't happen. It's only done on the basis of complaint. Who makes these complaints? Well, I had my sidewalk repaired because we wanted to, and I heard from the contractor we hired that in some cases contractors drive around and check the condition sidewalks and actually file complaints themselves because they need work. Don't know if that's true, but I did see a contractor driving around their neighborhood and making notes one day. So my question is the removal of trees put out for bid? Is it put out for bid among independent arborists or only designated city arborists? I hate to say this, but this whole situation seems a situation that is rife with loopholes that can be taken advantage of. Is there a more equitable way of deciding how sidewalks would be repaired and what trees can come down, rather than this kind of thing where, you know, somebody has a grudge against someone, they can file a complaint. This sets neighbor against neighbor, and I know about this because this happened in our neighborhood. Someone filed complaints about the number of the neighbors. I know one couple that moved out of the neighborhood because of it. It's not a good way to go. So my other comment is, I really seems to me that if, you know, we're talking about removal of trees, that a certified arborist should always be involved. Other than that, you know, I think that, you know, we had some good conversations earlier, and that, you know, we have some good resolutions, and I thank Director here for being willing to consider those, and I do hope we can have that meeting where people can make more questions if they need to. But again, I'm going to say, in the end, if it's a choice between the macadam and the trees, I choose the trees, and I think most of the people in my neighborhood would. And I hope you will take some of these comments under consideration. That's why I came back. Thank you.
Good evening. Thank you so much for allowing this time to speak. I'm Kim Plyler. I live on Sycamore Street at 1812 Sycamore as part of Edgeboro. Originally, we came down and we spoke at the committee meeting before this meeting, and I'd like to thank all of you and the director for clearly explaining that just because there were red dot or pink dots on the sides by the tree, that did not mean execution of the trees. We are now aware that of the 29 trees, only one may be even considered to be cut down if needed. But to me, what was brought forth was more than just learning about what the trees are, is learning about how we communicate as a city. I think moving forward to help with all tree communities, not just Edgeboro, but maybe Rosemont and all the other ones, because we are a tree city, that city council and the mayor should consider having a commission for trees. If we are a tree, and if there is one, please let me know, because I might not know. But we should have some type of commission that communicates with these communities and opens it up so that members of the community can come to the commission and get clear, concise communication. And truly, that's what prevents problems from rising to the level that we've experienced this week in our neighborhood. So thank you for that. And part two of what I wanted to say is congratulate Mr. Rodriguez for all the great work he has done, and he just left. Okay. And also to ask the city's support, because right now we're in my job is a communicator and a public relations person, and we have an opportunity to nominate heroes to CNN's Heroes program, and I really think Mr. Rodriguez qualifies for that. So I would like your help, and it's at no cost, we're doing this all pro bono, to maybe get a story put together video-wise that we can send to CNN's Heroes program and get him nominated. And thank you.
Is there anyone else who'd like to make comment? Yes.
Hello. I'm Erin Connolly, 729 Delwood Street, so Elmwood Park area of Bethlehem. And I was planning on presenting with my colleague Guillermo Lopez, but he ran after Mr. Rodriguez to connect with him and see if he could help make something happen. So you have me. So I am here as, you know, as a resident of Bethlehem, as an employee of United Way, and as a member of a community organization that has come together called the Strategic Response Team. Hey, Guillermo, there you are.
Good.
To really ask counties and cities to consider, when using American Rescue Plan funds, really consider centering racial equity in the decision-making and distribution of those funds. You know, some are calling this opportunity really a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity where the resources are really significant and relatively flexible, and so each individual city and county can make the decision to direct the funding where it's most needed. So, and if there isn't a race-conscious, equity-centered approach, we really run the risk of perpetuating the same inequalities that we saw come up over and over again over this past year and a half with COVID. So before I turn to some specific requests, I'm going to turn it over to Guillermo. In case there's some more kind of lead up that you wanted to share.
Sure, I'm Guillermo Lopez. I live at 1404 Bud Avenue, Bethlehem.
You know, the very first thing I want to say is how much I appreciate all the work and time that you guys put in. I don't think our public and our communities recognize how much skin you put into this game, and I just want to pay respects to that, so thank you. So I'm not trying to blame or shame, but you know, about 16 months ago the world changed, and there was this group of well-meaning people, and they were called the COVID Strategic Response Team, and it was made up of some very influential, well-meaning, caring nonprofits that were trying to make a difference. Red Cross, United Way, the Community Foundation. I can go down the list of all these players that were involved, CACLV, and they were trying to figure out how to get help to these people that COVID really, you know, raised the bar around the challenges that we face around equity and inclusion. And about 3 months, was it 3 months later that you guys invited me in? And my first question was, why are you calling this a COVID strategic response team? This stuff's been going on before COVID. This should be a strategic response team, period. And that's sort of what's happened. So it's amazing the dialogue we have there and how we take on the challenges and the people that are involved, and how we move things forward. And then I think the last thing I want to say is, we had a blip, if you will, around the swimming pool passes recently. It's not about blaming or shaming, but to me, that's a perfect example that we missed the mark around diversity, equity, and inclusion there. And it happened so nonchalantly. It happened like it wasn't caught, had it not been for some people who have their eye in this special place. So it really told me that there is a need in our community for that. It really told me that it's needed at every level, every profession, every space, that in every place we breathe air. So with that being said, I will turn it over more to Aaron.
Thank you, Guillermo. So in my last 43 seconds, I'm encouraging you to consider three things in particular. One, to specifically call out and center racial equity as a goal of American Rescue Plan funds. Two, that you set measurable goals and track progress towards the goals in a transparent way. We've been really impressed with the Bethlehem Area School District's work in the area where data is disaggregated, and equity plans really have specific and measurable goals. And finally, and I think one of the most important, is really engaging historically marginalized communities in the decision-making process for these funds. And so again, this is an opportunity for leaders to reimagine and reframe. And I really want to thank you for considering it and hope that you can use these funds to make a strong commitment to racial equity in Bethlehem. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Mr. Reynolds, do you want to add something?
Yeah, just quickly, I want to thank Ms. Connolly and Mr. Lopez for coming. I don't know if that was last week, the week before, we had an opportunity to meet with Councilwoman Negron to the left of me and just kind of talk about these issues. And I think in the coming months, as we start to talk about what we're going to do with these dollars, we need to have that focus on the lens of racial equity. And that means including people also in those conversations, as far as, you know, what has not been done in the past systemically, what have we not been able to do. And it's no surprise when you turn on the television, when you look around, there's a lot of people that are trying to fight that lens being used in the allocation of resources, whether or not it's at the school district level or the municipal level or whatever it might be. And some of the other earlier programs, as we've talked about, whether or not it's PPP or whatever, benefited those people that had grant writers and that had people who were able to meet the deadlines and understand where those programs were. And, you know, obviously the intent of those was to get money out to help people as soon as possible. But, you know, you have very wealthy people that got millions of dollars in support, which, you know, they may or may not have deserved. And that lens of equity wasn't used as much. So I think it's an important thing for us in both the short term and the long term. I mean, we're dealing with $34 million over the next, you know, 28 months. Some of that money is going to have to be focused towards long-term financial stability for the city, but also what can we do in the short term to help people out, and most importantly, how do we bring those people to the conversation? So I appreciate Ms. Connolly, Mr. Lopez coming, and I encourage you guys as we start to have those conversations publicly about what we're going to do with those dollars by the end of the year, in the budget next year, and so on and so forth, is I would certainly appreciate it if you guys would continue to be involved in those conversations. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Walden.
Is there anyone else who would like to make comment on any subject not on tonight's agenda? Moving to, I'm sorry, Mr. Haynes, go ahead.
Yeah, Bruce Haynes, 63 West Church Street. Can you identify if there's going to be a process for people to apply for the $34 million funding and what that, when that might start and what the process might be?
That's something the administration is working out. They will present a budget in a way to council, and then we'll have a conversation. We're in the process right now of scheduling a committee of the whole meeting to start having a public conversation of how we're going to allocate those funds.
So the administration is going to put together a proposal of how to use those funds without any input from the community? Huh? I'm trying to understand. Is there a process by which, for example, you know, we're looking for potentially a World Heritage designation for Bethlehem and the significance of that, of Bethlehem being on the world stage, and I think there's significant help that is needed in our World Heritage class buildings in terms of retrofitting and infrastructure dollars to restore those buildings to place us in a candidate position. So clearly that would be how does one get that up on the plate as a potential, and other things that we may have that we as citizens see that, you know, that put Bethlehem in an infrastructure deficiency mode, for example.
Mr. Evans?
Yeah, thank you.
Would you like to?
Yes. I think when we talk about the rollout of a plan, it's a rollout of a, to begin the discussion, this is something that is going to take time to both roll out and allocate to its highest and best use across the city, with a whole lot, as we heard of and from in the last couple months, a whole lot of interest in parties, and there's a complicated scenario also to understand of eligible uses and restrictions. Each bucket, some the restaurant revitalization fund is different than the PPP, is different from this. So I think when we talk about our, when we're ready to, and we have a date, when we do get a date set to talk about the rescue plan with regard to the money that's sent to the cities, we're going to talk about a little bit, take a step back and talk about the eligible uses, what's out there now, because we're trying to also make sure we can broadly adapt it to as many groups as possible, so the same groups aren't being double or duplicated, and we can reach as many possible within the city as possible at the time. So it's going to be a discussion in the first time we talk, not so much a proposal, but a layout of these are uses of it, or these are restrictions and guidelines that we don't have yet from the Treasury Department, from the city's uses. Some things, as we know, if the rescue plan were put out last January, and the money was out in the street, and it was very helpful right away. The money that came to the cities, they sent to us interim guidelines for us to look at, but not final guidance. When we looked at it, we thought, well, it'd be very confusing if we rolled something out right away and then a couple weeks from now saying, wait, the guidance has changed based on feedback from the interim period, and having to pull back because it causes confusion and obvious frustration from time to time. So we've been anxious to present, but at the same time patient to get a firm understanding of what we're able to do, and then present in this format in a public hearing or a committee, the whole format, what the initial concept is. And that some of it will roll out shortly thereafter. We right now will be able to use the first half of the funding, the $34 million, to the city anytime in the next 3 years, but we don't even have the other part until next year. So we're getting it in waves of funding as well. So it's a little bit to unwrap and ravel, and I think the presentation, it's not a proposal that's going to be voted on and that night by any means. It's more of a, these are our ideas and the concepts and why and what we think, how be best fitted, and that just opens the dialogue to anyone that was there that night, anyone that reads about it, questions that council gets, question that gets council after.
What's that?
As well as, yeah, the open public forum. So that's how we see it. We talked about, even depending on how this night goes, this is the first for all of us to have this kind of money at this time. And once we think we've identified some ideas, does it go somewhere outside of this room here? Does it go to with members of the council or liaisons or just members of administration? The council's there to watch and invite like anyone else to different schools where it does. Time is of the essence. But if you get to different parts of the community outside of just this room itself, because this is a great pre-centralized location, but our city is diversified, and we would be happy to talk about as much as we need to once the time comes. That's where the long and short of it at this.
Okay, cause so just translating, will we have an opportunity and should we be presenting to you our requests for needs in that regard?
And I don't get too much further into it than what I'll say now is that part of our thoughts and to move it forward is to create funding buckets much like the federal government has. This is for education, right? The district's got their own bucket on how to spend it. The cities were given money to spend for the cities. The transportation agencies, the families, we're looking to do the same thing. It's not going to just be one open. Because of the restrictions that are entailed, you asked about an application, we do believe that will be part of it. We believe that part of the bucket that will be available to might be nonprofits or businesses, once that number is allocated, that there will be now an application that we'll be able to go through, because we won't be able to, there's a lot of questions to be worked out. What's the maximum amount? We have not driven that. That's part of the conversation we want to have once we have the guidance. What if some groups have already received two and three different for assessment? Are they made whole, or it's very difficult for us to understand if someone's already been made whole, because there's a lot of money flying around and it's a good thing, but we also want to make sure it's distributed again to the best needs so there aren't gaps, and that's our attempt to do the best we can with that, where someone might have the opportunity to receive funding two and three and four different ways based on those buckets are coming down from the federal government. So we're also trying to gain an understanding the best we can from that perspective.
Okay. I think we've talked, Mr. Alcohol, I've talked about the need to bury the electric, the overhead wires in our most historic area here from Heckwelder to Center Street. Instead, we're working in other areas of the city, and we face this great opportunity here, and we don't seem to be putting any priority on that. And you got a chunk of funds here that are coming that can really help Bethlehem. And so I just want to, I'm not talking about private money for a business. I'm talking about just ideas for where we think the city, you know, can spend some of the money. And I don't know whether we just have to have a one-on-one meeting with the mayor and yourself, or how do we get this request into you guys? Do we just send an email, or is there a process that's going to occur for input?
There will be. I don't want to get too far into this. I mean, public comment is intended for public to make comments to council and direct those comments to the chair.
Okay.
And not have a dialogue back and forth, because I don't want to go down that road.
Okay.
At this time, we are looking at a date in late September to have a committee of the whole meeting in order to start the first part of the conversation that's going to be an ongoing series of conversations throughout the rest of the year. And at that point, council would accept public comment or a petition for whatever cause that might be. But if there's something more specific that you'd like to talk to, reaching out to members of council or individually or the mayor and the administration might be a good idea.
Okay, thank you.
Any other comment on any subject not being voted on tonight's agenda? Moving to second public comment on any resolution or ordinance listed on tonight's agenda. If anyone would like to make comment on any resolution or ordinance on tonight's agenda.
Moving to communications, communication 6B.
Memorandum from Police Chief Michelle Cott with an attached resolution and agreement for the purchase of a duty weapon by a retired officer of the Dufflin Police Department. Pursuant to the third class city code, retired officers may purchase their duty firearms at fair market value.
Resolution 10B is on the agenda. Communication 6C.
A memorandum from Josh Burke, Executive Director of the Bethlehem Area Public Library, with memorandum and attached proposed resolution authorizing the city to execute an application for a $500,000 pass-through grant that would fund first floor renovations at the library at 11 West Church Street.
Resolution 10C is on the agenda. Communication 6D.
A memorandum from Michael Alcohol, Director of Public Works, with a request to transfer $337,000 from recreation fees to the Monocacy Way Trail Improvement Project.
Bill 26 is on the agenda as 9B. Resolution 6E.
A memorandum from City Solicitor William P. Leeson with an attached resolution and associated use permit agreement. The permittee is McCarthy's Irish Pub, Inc., and it's for the Celtic Celebration event on Walnut Street between Main Street and Getter Street on September 25th and 26th.
Resolution 10D is on the agenda. Communication 6F.
A memorandum from City Solicitor William P. Leeson with an attached resolution and associated use permit agreement with Celtic Fest DBA Celtic Cultural Alliance for the 2021, 22, and 23 Celtic Classic Highland Games and Festival events. The dates and locations are specified in the agreement.
Resolution 10E is on the agenda. Communication 6G.
A memorandum from Michael Alcohol, Director of Public Works, recommending a contract with Construction Master Services, LLC, for Monocacy Way Trail Improvements. The term of the contract is 90 days. The cost is $800,975.10, and there are no renewals.
Resolution 10F is on the agenda. Reports. I have no reports this evening. Mr. Alcohol, as acting mayor, do you have any reports?
The mayor's here.
Oh.
Thank you, Mr. President. In the spirit of Order 23, I hereby reappoint Mr. Ortiz, 801 Arden Street, Bethlehem, to the Bethlehem Housing Authority. This appointment is effective through May of 2026.
The resolution is sponsored by Ms. Negron and Mr. Reynolds. Discussion? Clerk, please call the roll. Mr. Grom?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Ms. Cramson Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Walden?
Aye.
Passes 7-0.
Administrative Order 24, hereby reappoint Craig Schultz, 1621 Eastern Avenue, Bethlehem, to the Bethlehem Human Relations Commission. This appointment is effective through March of 2024.
The resolution to confirm is sponsored by Ms. Negron and Mr. Reynolds. Discussion? Clerk, please call the roll. Mr. Grom?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Walder?
Aye. Passes 7-0.
Thank you, Mr. President. That's my report.
Thank you. Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Public Works Committee met on August 17th, 2021 at 5:30 p.m. There were two agenda items discussed at the meeting. The first item was discussion of a council proposed responsible ordinance contract that I brought forward. The second agenda item was discussion of a bid preference bill brought forward by Councilman Callahan. Due to time constraints, the two agenda items were postponed to be discussed at a future Public Works Committee meeting.
Thank you. Ordinances for final passage. Ordinance 8A.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending Article 913 of the City of Bethlehem Codified Ordinances titled Water Rates and Charges. Bill 23-2021 is sponsored by Mr. Cologne and Ms. Cramsey Smith.
Discussion?
Just quickly.
Yes.
I wasn't here when this was last week, and I do identify Mr. Buscola sitting here with us. Thank you. We had talked just a little bit about the differences in water costs, not just delivery rates, but costs to people who live in Bethlehem versus people who live in other places outside of Bethlehem that the Bethlehem Water Authority services. And I had brought up the idea that perhaps the more expensive water delivery to the outer, like Bethlehem Township and Hanover and all those places that depend on our water authority, that we should actually have them pay the higher rates rather than our own citizens have to have higher rates. And he was very taught me a lot, and basically it costs less to bring, because the authority is up in the mountains, the water's up in the mountains, it costs less to bring the water down to the townships than it does necessarily even to the people in South Bethlehem. But I think what is something we could talk about in the future, and the only reason I'm bringing it up is to put this idea that the construction and capital costs that it takes for us to maintain those lines and to construct new lines is not something that necessarily should be borne by the taxpayers of Bethlehem. So that when we come to our capital budgets, we can look at those costs and perhaps see if there is a differential in what it costs per capita to deliver water on a capital needs basis to these townships versus our own citizens. Because I just don't think our citizens should be forced to pay for the increased. So there's less density out there, so the costs are going to be increased for capital construction, and I just wanted to be able to put that into our brains when we start thinking about our capital budget in the fall. That's all. Thank you.
Clerk, please call the roll.
Mr. Groen?
Aye.
Mr. Rattle?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Ms. Gramsci-Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Walder?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Ordinance 8B.
An ordinance authorizing the vacation, discontinuance, striking from the city's general plan of streets an unopened portion of Luna Street and an unopened portion of Bushkill Street in the 14th Ward of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Northampton, Pennsylvania. Bill 24-2021 is sponsored by Mr. Cologne and Ms. Gramsci-Smith.
Discussion? Clerk, please call the roll.
Mr. Groen?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Ms. Gramsci-Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Walder?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Ordinance 8C.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending Part 13 of the Codified Ordinances relating to zoning with respect to the properties in the OMU District by amending Section 1311A through B pertaining to the configuration of off-street parking and driveway access onto arterial streets in Section 1314.02B5 to lessen the minimum rear yard setback, Bill 16-2021, sponsored by Mr. Cologne and Mr. Waldron.
Discussion? Mr. Cologne?
Thank you, President Waldron. I'm not going to say anything that hasn't been said at previous meetings other than I appreciate those that have given this consideration and those who haven't. I understand your point and glad that this is the, I'm not glad this will be the last time we're voting on it, but now we'll see, you know, where things go as this project keeps moving forward for the years to come. Thank you.
Dr. Manmar?
I'll be brief. I just very much want to echo Ms. Bradley's comments from two meetings ago about the problems with this proposal, and I agree with her wholeheartedly, so I cannot be supporting it tonight.
Ms. Negro?
Thank you, President Waldron. I echo what Dr. Brownwell just said. We've talked about this for a long time, and I believe that there's a venue in which the owner could go in front of the zoning board and request a change to there instead of changing the law. I think this is a very important site, as Ms. Bradley said, and I will not be supporting this tonight.
Thank you, Ms. Walden. Just a couple comments here. I do think that this process, as it's played out in front of City Council, has allowed us to have a lot of conversation that previously, if it had just gone to the Zoning Hearing Board, we would not have been able to have. We probably would not have seen Alloy 5 brought in at the request of the mayor, which has substantially improved some of the master concepts that we saw before that I think only played out this way because we've been able to have this public conversation. There's a lot of work to do here as far as how do we make sure that some of the progress and improvements that have been discussed become part of the overall project. And as I said last time at the meeting, is that I think a lot of this is going to come down to, you know, the planning process. Is that 53 acres are not getting developed, 25% of that's not getting developed at all, but the rest of it is going to be developed through the process that, you know, our planning department is going to really have the opportunity to weigh in as far as the buildings are concerned, a lot of things we talked about as far as sustainable development that's mentioned in the climate action plan. And that's really where I think the hard work of maximizing the ability of this project to be what it can be at this point. We've had this conversation many times. Like, there was traditional neighborhood development planned over there or proposed over there in 2015, and that scared a lot of people. And then when we changed the zoning at that point to take away or allay the fears of a lot of people, we ended up with a mixed use that is in front of us at the time. It is not the ideal situation, as we've mentioned many times, but our job at this point is to make sure that we get the highest, best, most sustainable use of that development over there. And that's going to be done through our planning process, through our planning commission, and the ability of our planning department, the city administration and council, to take a lot of those concepts discussed in our climate action plan and really ask, are these buildings meeting what is recommended in there? Are we able to mandate some of these things? How are we able to encourage walkability? How are we able to encourage a project over there that we can be proud of at the end of the day? But also, with that being said, none of that has to do with what we're voting on today. It's moving parking, not creating any parking. It's moving some rows of parking to be able to allow for this development. I will be supportive. Thank you.
Mr. Callahan?
Thank you, Mr. President. I agree with Mr. Reynolds again. It is all about parking, and we are not creating more parking. It's just moving some parking from the back of the building to the front, and allowing a setback that many of the other buildings and surrounding buildings next to these buildings already have. As far as Ms. Bradley's comments a few weeks ago, she had, I guess she was against the project because of she thought it, there should be more parking for electric vehicles or whether it's gas propelled or electric propelled or propane propelled or some new technology. Or whether it's George Jetson in the future, they still need parking, and so the bottom line is about parking, and I think this Mr. Clone's amendment helps solve this problem and get this project moving forward. So thank you,
Mr. Kempsey Smith.
I guess I'll chime in. I'm also going to be consistent and vote no, because I definitely concur with what Mrs. Bradley said at the meeting, and I also feel that I know that there's other buildings in that area and many other medical buildings that I have been to that they did not need this amendment, and their parking was fine with the parking in the back. So I really don't feel that there's a need to change the law, but I do appreciate Councilman Cologne's efforts to try to come up with a resolve to this issue, but I am going to vote no.
Clerk, please call the roll.
Mr. Groen?
Nay.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Nay.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Ms. Gramsci Smith?
Nay.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 4-3. Ordinance 9A.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh, Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending the 2021 capital budget for non-utilities, Bill 26, 2021, is sponsored by, an ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh, Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending Article 342 of the Codified Ordinances, entitled Local Economic Revitalization Tax Assistance Enterprise Development Area, Bill 25, 2021, is sponsored by Mr. Groen and Mr. Reynolds.
Discussion? Ramsey Smith.
Thank you. As I said previously, I think this is great, and I really applaud the administration for all their work, especially Mrs. Carney's office, to finally bring the issue of affordable housing to the forefront, and to finally, we're really doing something here, we're really getting our teeth into it. But as I did say before, I think it is really vital that we have some kind of formula and standard that we can say we are using, that we can apply to every unit within the alerted districts. And that's why I feel that the $25,000 just was not a standardized amount. And I would like to make a motion to amend this, that we use the HUD affordability gap method that Mrs. Carner had alluded to, and have increased the amount to $42,450 per unit, with a 5% increase per year based on the increase in the cost of rentals. Second.
Motion and second. Discussion on the motion.
Mr. Reynolds?
Yeah, I just would say I'll not be supporting the motion for the reasons I laid out earlier, is that it's not about an affordability gap or what we think or what we feel someone should be paying. I understand the idea of a formula, but we're trying to get people to pick this option, and I don't believe that raising that, based on our conversations with our economic and our community economic development department and Ms. Carner about what she feels is the number that we're going to get the money, that we're going to be able to direct it towards people that are actually low income, I will not be supporting it. Thank you.
Mr. Callahan?
Mr. Reynolds, I don't know what's in the air tonight, but I agree with you again. I think the...
You better be careful. If you keep saying that, we might go in the opposite direction.
I know. I think it's really important that we don't make this too high of a bar, that the choice is not to go with the... the incentive program, and that's probably the worst thing that could happen to us. If they decide not to go with an incentive program and they decide to do it on their own, they can build all high-end luxury housing over there, and we will get, in the end, we'll get nothing. So I will not be supporting it. Thank you.
Thank you.
I will not be supporting the amendment.
I just want to add additional information. Like I had said at the last meeting, other entities within the state college is getting $129,000 per unit. Pittsburgh's getting $180,000. The average state formula through Grounded Solutions is $108,000. So I have to say, I think it really is pitiful that we're going to ask Bethlehem to give tax abatement money, which is money that is coming from the taxpayers, the hardworking taxpayers who have lost a lot in the last 16 months, many of them, who are struggling. And we're going to say, okay, to a developer, just give us $25,000 per unit when other entities are getting so much more. The other important factor that I think we need to consider is the fact that over the 10 years of the LRTA, the average savings to the developer in taxes is $1 million to $2.5 million. That's a lot. And to say $25,000, I think is sinful, quite frankly. I really do.
Ms. Negron?
Thank you, President Waldron. I just want to say, Ms. Councilwoman Pansley Smith beat me to the line, because after listening to Ms. Smith today, I was actually going to suggest to change it to 75. Because according to the numbers, that is actually what it should be, the number that will be saving or not if they choose. Because I will hope that they choose to do affordable housing rather than the loop. But in order to compromise between the conversation that we've been having, we don't want to make it too high so the developers don't take it, or, I think it should be 75, but I'm going to compromise. My thoughts of it should be, the real number should be 75 at least, and I'm going to support your amendment. Thank you.
Ms. Carter, are you still with us? Thank you. I'd be interested to hear your perspective or that of anyone in your department on what you think that change would be from 25,000 to the, is it 42,000?
42,450.
450, and what that impact might be like.
There's been a lot of good points made this evening when it comes to increasing the fees. The worst case scenario that we could possibly have is if we have no development, no tax rateables, no affordable units, no, investment in the funds. The second worst thing is to have the development without having the inclusion of either units or the offset, fees associated with the alternative and the ordinance. I, too, don't want to see us go to a point where we're too high. And I would believe that if you looked at some of the newer projects in the city that include residential that aren't necessarily on the south side, some maybe are, but throughout the city, that they have folks living in those buildings that meet the requirements of the ordinance. You know, I suspect that that is already being achieved to some degree, maybe not to the degree that we'd like, maybe not the percentages we would like. So, you know, the difficulty that I have is balancing the need for the litter to begin with, which I tried to articulate in the memo provided to the council previously. These are not projects that are easy to develop. Trying to balance the opportunity for investment in the funds at a point in which it allows us to do more. And so, you know, it's really difficult for me to suggest that there is, you know, one position better than the other, Mr. Waldron. But, you know, I would say that we put forward a proposal that we thought was fair initially, and maybe to address some of the comments from earlier speakers, we didn't articulate well where we came up with the fee. But ultimately, when looking at those costs of development, and I think it was Mr. Callahan who had mentioned a project that he thought was maybe $800,000. I had seen the documentation associated with the remediation. It was over $1 million. And so when looking at what some of those challenges are, so it wasn't far off is my point, but there are significant, significant challenges on these projects. And so, you know, I think ultimately, I'm confident the proposal that we put forward is attainable and will get us further. When I was in front of the school district, I suggested our goal was not to hit a grand slam as much as I would like to. There's no magic bullet, as I said in my memo, to solving this issue. But it's those singles and doubles that are going to get us down the road of addressing our affordable housing crisis in the city. And so ultimately, the administration put forward a proposal. We're comfortable with that proposal. And, you know, I leave as a council to decide whether or not there's a room to increase those fees.
Thank you, Ms. Carner. Mr. Callahan?
Yeah, and I think it's also important to, you know, understand that what Ms. Carner said, this property, or most of these properties down there, they have no idea what's underneath them. There's been 120 or 140 years, whatever it is, in you know, in steel making down here, in industrial use. I think the owner of the ice rink said that he had to spend $800,000 once they started digging because they found a bunch of barrels. I don't know if it was oil or whatever, or contaminated products or what. But you know, when before the sands came in. Many of you know my brother John was a mayor at that time, and I know firsthand from talking to him and some of the developers that went in there. There was two or three commercial developers that went in there. They did soil samples. They walked away. There was two residential developers that walked in there, did soil samples, and they walked away. So there's contaminated dirt down there. A lot of it's capped right now, but once you break that open. We have no idea, they have no idea what's going to be there. That 510 flats property that Ms. Carner said was over $1 million, that was a live gas line. It was not on, it wasn't on the city's blueprints. The city didn't know it was there. The steel, no one knew it was there. So I think the $25,000 is fair. You know, I think it's going to help us with affordable housing problem. And I think that, you know, it's not so high that you know, the housing developers or whoever's, you know, doing their, the, you know, the development over there is going to be shying away and not participating in the program, which I think would be the worst you know, solution. So I again will be supporting this 100%, not the amendment, but the overall proposal. Thank you,
Mr. Clark.
Thank you, President Walter. Ms. Carner, if you're still there. I know we spoke earlier during the public hearing about historically other LURTAs. We referenced 1986, 91, 2012. For LURTA expansions, North Side, South Side, Central Business District, and that this is meant to be
this is more to be the jumping off point, not the landing point, when we talk about affordable housing. When talking about this $25,000 number, when do some LRTAs, because LRTAs like the TIF have an expiration, correct? Or what
they do.
Say again?
They do.
So when would be our next opportunity? Because I know we're identifying and talking about parcels on the south side tonight and with what's in front of us. That's not to say that at some future date, you know, ahead of us, we couldn't be looking at implementing something similar in, you know, parts of the north side or west side or other parts of Bethlehem. When would be the next recertification, or when would we be voting again to kind of renew LRTA, where we would have an opportunity to use this as sort of our pilot and see how it shaped out in terms of the buy-in with the fee in lieu of the $25,000, and revisit kind of how it's been performing and see if we want to apply that model or tweak it and apply something similar to a different part of the city.
The larger LRTA on the south side, which has like 6 or 7 parts to it, it goes all the way down, you know, to the Lower Saucon border and then runs up through the Central Business District, excluding the donut hole that had been the TIF district that expired last year. That expires in 2022, on December 31st. And so I would expect that council would receive a proposal or at least through the required reporting, an analysis of the performance of that, what's left to be included in any kind of modifications or changes to the LRTA around affordable housing. The north side 2027 LRTA expires in 2023. And so, you know, that year, in anticipation of whether or not that administration will renew the LRTA, will come before council as well. I do, though, want to point out that LRTA is not the only tool. And as we had talked about in a recent, well, I keep saying recent community development committee meeting, it was probably 4 or 5 months ago at this point. This is an issue that we as the city, I hope, would be dealing with whenever the opportunity arises in policy, whether it's around incentives or zoning. We very much think it needs to continue to be addressed through change in policy around housing.
Thank you, Ms. Carter. So, given that information, while I do think there is merit in the discussion of raising the floor of the $25,000, because we don't really have any comps here in the Lehigh Valley. We talked about State College, we talked about other municipalities, which are each unique in of themselves. And given that we're looking at, in the near future, looking at you know, voting again, future councils on LRTA districts and revisiting what we're doing tonight, I'm more in favor of scaling up as we look forward, as we look to future proposals, as opposed to scaling down if we're unhappy with the results of what we're doing, especially given the you know, challenges that we discussed that have long been known when developing Southside parcels because of the old brownfields and things like that. So I will not be supporting the motion that we're voting on, and will be supporting leaving it as proposed by the administration. Thank you.
Did you want to add something? Ms. Negron?
Thank you. I was just thinking back to the owner of this skate ring, and I'm also thinking about the worries with obvious reason of the administration as they think about who knows what they're going to find in there when they dig, and also thinking about what Dr. Van Wert suggested at the beginning, why don't we go also include some of the residential areas that have a lot of abandoned buildings, abandoned homes, that every time I drive by I just want to cry, knowing that so many people in need of affordable housing and they're empty houses, empty buildings within the neighborhood in the south side. So, you know, considering we don't know what they're going to find in those parking lots when they dig, how much it's going to cost them to develop, thinking about the parking of the investment that the skating pub, steel pub, whatever it's called, made, and they're going to have to go out of business if they're going to lose their parking space. Why, you know, I think the administration should really think about that. Maybe we should move some of these letter squares that we have in here from the possible horrible things that they're going to find in those land, because we know what had happened before in those diggings, and then move some of that letter to the neighborhood, to the residential area in the south side, especially, you know, we have a blighted committee that have a list of properties that could be put into the letter instead of keeping all of those dangerous parking lots that we don't know what's in there. So the developers don't have to worry about that. It's a thought for the administration to consider. Maybe we can make some changes for next meeting. Thank you.
Ms. Cramsey's first.
Thank you. I just want to make one more comment. And I do want to say I really did, while I even feel that 42 isn't enough, I considered that, you know, in those areas, they can be met with a lot of challenges. And I have to say that I also have some personal insight, because my brother, God rest his soul, was a developer for many, many years. So I know on a personal level the challenges, both financially and otherwise, that developers can meet. And I also know that, you know, eventually I also know that what the return on investment on their properties and their projects can be. So given those, I can look at it from both ways is what I'm trying to say. And I still feel very strongly that I think the 42 is where it should be. I think the 25 is really just, way too low. Way too low. Thank you.
I think Mr. Clone surmised it well, that we don't really have comps. We're looking at other municipalities who have much higher numbers, but it's really comparing apples and oranges with a small municipality like us compared to Pittsburgh or State College with a huge number of student housing comparatively. I think the markets are completely different, so we can't really pick at those numbers. And I do think there might be an argument for a higher number, but we don't know just because we don't have enough information. I wouldn't want to scare away a developer from taking this incentive and developing just market rate, and by being, in a sense, too greedy to try to take a slice of that pie for a positive thing. Perfection is the enemy of good keeps popping up, and I largely tend to agree with the administration and the professionals in that department and the thought that they put into this, not only on this, but most of the time these things come to us. You know, I'm not an expert on this, so I trust those professionals in that department and tend to agree with the thoughts that they bring forward. So I think I'm in agreement that I'm not going to support the amendment, but would support the ordinance this evening. Is there any other discussion on Mr. Ramsey Smith's amendment? The clerk, please call the roll.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Nay.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Nay.
Mr. Cologne?
Nay.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Nay. The amendment fails 4-3. Any additional discussion on bill number 25? The administration has submitted an amendment to the proposed bill, and I will call on a representative from the administration to discuss that proposed amendment.
I can comment on that. We had heard at the committee, well, I think it was last council meeting where this was discussed, some ideas around ensuring the flexibility of use of funds to include rental assistance. When we went to the school district finance committee meeting last Monday evening, we heard that same desire And so including language allowing for rental assistance is really a short and sweet amendment that we're requesting, but it'll give us the flexibility to use those funds in that way.
Thank you, Ms. Carner. I will accept a motion in a second. Oh, pardon me. Thank you, Mr. Bodoni. If you would read the amendment. Thank you.
So the administration's proposed amendment would amend Bill 25-2021, Section 342-02-D2. The amendment would allow the city to use money in the Affordable Housing and Remediation Fund, funded by developer payments in lieu of constructing affordable units, for rental assistance in addition to other permitted uses. And it's included in the hearing packet.
So at this point, we would need a motion and a second to consider the amendment proposed by the administration.
So moved.
Motion by Mr. Reynolds, second by his partner this evening in voting, Mr. Callahan.
Don't ever say that.
You would only be so lucky.
Discussion on the amendment.
Mr. Waldron, I would just like to thank Ms. Carner and administration for bringing this forward. I think it's a really, I appreciate the response to the comments from people on city council as well as the school district. As I said before, I believe this is the best end result for these affordable housing dollars, is assisting people through rental assistance. We obviously can talk about different things as far as what we can do with affordable housing trust fund dollars, but the cost of creating units, the cost of subsidizing units, all sorts of different things. But, you know, this direct rental assistance absolutely has to be part of the puzzle at the end of the day. Thank you, Mr. Waldron.
Mr. Callahan?
I'm 100% in favor. My only question is, who's going to determine who gets it? What are the limits? What are the, is it based on free and reduced lunches? Is it just for Bethlehem School District kids? Is it for anybody in the city of Bethlehem? What are the parameters?
We don't have a lot of details. We haven't developed a program, and until we know how much, you know, whether or not there's going to be a contribution to the fund, we didn't really think it was the best use of our time to go to the nth degree on that development. Additionally, we want to remain flexible, but we have communicated to the school district if they want to be a partner as city council or Northampton County and having input, we can put together a task force. We do have a model, though, to emulate using Bethany now through the county funds and through our CDBG funds. The ordinance would restrict us to only City of Bethlehem families, not anyone in the Bethlehem, area school district. But I would expect that from the staff perspective, we would make the recommendation that we model it off of the existing, program for families, that are in need of the dollars.
Thank you. That answers my question. Thank you.
Ms. Negron?
Thank you, President Waldron. I am very, very familiar to the program and the process in which the city has allocated money for rent assistance in the past. And the only thing that I will recommend that you please reconsider, not to provide that funding to only one organization, especially when there are a lot of members of the community that are not connected or, familiar with the process or with the organization, have relationship with the organization, and they might be going out to other entities like the Salvation Army or whomever, maybe even the school district would be another venue. But I'm hoping that I would like for you to reconsider that the money that is allocated for rent assistance that is not given to only one organization. Another issue with that is that the nonprofit organizations that we have in the Lehigh Valley that provide that kind of social services whenever they have it, they're very small. They don't have big staff. So for within the last year, all the money that was put together for help, it was a struggle. I still have individuals that I gave them the number and the emails, and they feel like nobody gets back to me. And they have rent to pay. So I think that, and I understand that the organization is too small to handle so many calls and so many applications. And that's why, because of that, and because of the relationship the community are used to, having with some organizations, that the money is spread equally spread to other nonprofit organizations for rent assistance so that members of the community from all areas of the city can reach out and get the funding that they need for rent assistance. Thank you.
Is there any other discussion on the administration's amendment for rental assistance? Clerk, please call the roll.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Colon?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey-Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Further discussion on Bill number 25? The clerk will please call the roll on the bill as amended.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Nay.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Colon?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey-Smith?
Nay.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 5-2. Ordinance 9B.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton County, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending the 2021 capital budget for non-utilities, Bill 26-2021, sponsored by Ms. Negron and Mr. Reynolds.
Discussion? Clerk, please call the roll.
Ms. Negron? Question.
Pardon me.
Sorry.
Yes.
I guess the one question, I was just wondering, how much money is coming from the DCNR and Northampton County Open Space for this? Do you know offhand?
Roughly $250 to $300 each.
Okay. Thank you.
Clerk, please call the roll.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Colon?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey-Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Resolutions? Resolution 10A.
Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Council of the City of Bethlehem, Northampton County, Pennsylvania, in accordance with the above-cited Municipal Records Manual, authorizes the disposition of financial services, public records, as stated in the Exhibit A. Resolution is sponsored by Ms. Negron and Mr. Reynolds.
Discussion? Please call the roll.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Colon?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey-Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Resolution 10B.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and the Controller under such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute an agreement to effectuate the transfer of a city-issued handgun assigned to Robert Taranzi, retired city police officer. The resolution is sponsored by Mr. Negron and Mr. Reynolds.
Discussion? Clerk, please call the roll.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Colon?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey-Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Resolution 10C.
Now, therefore, be it resolved by the City Council of the City of Bethlehem that the facility located at 11 West Church Street, Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, known as the Bethlehem Area Public Library, shall be used undisturbed as a public library for 50 years of the useful life of the project to be funded by the grant, whichever is shorter. The Mayor and the Controller are authorized and directed to execute all application forms necessary to apply for the Keystone Grant. They will be passed through the City of Bethlehem to the Bethlehem Area Public Library. The Mayor and the Controller are authorized to execute such other agreements and documents as deemed necessary. The resolution is sponsored by Ms. Negron and Mr. Reynolds.
Discussion? Clerk, please call the roll.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Colon?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey-Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Resolution 10B.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and the Controller, under such other city officials as deemed appropriate, are hereby authorized to execute a use permit agreement with McCarthy's Irish Pub, Inc. for the Celtic Celebration event. The resolution is sponsored by Mr. Grown and Mr. Reynolds.
Discussion? Clerk, please call the roll.
Mr. Grown?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Colon?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey-Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Resolution 10E.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and the Controller, under such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor, are hereby authorized to execute a use permit agreement with Celtic Fest, Inc., DBA Celtic Cultural Alliance for the 2021-22-23 Celtic Classic Highland Games and Festival. The resolution is sponsored by Ms. Negron and Mr. Reynolds.
Discussion? Clerk, please call the roll.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Colon?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey-Smith?
Aye.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the City is hereby authorized to execute an agreement with Construction Master Services, LLC.
You didn't call me for 10E.
10E? Yes, okay. Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Resolution 10F.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the City is hereby authorized to execute the agreement with Construction Master Services, LLC, for Monocacy Way Trail Improvements.
Mr. Alfall, do you care to give us some information on this contract, please?
Sure. Do you have any specific question or generally just why we're asking for this?
The 30-second rundown about what this money is going to be used for.
It's going to be used for improving and a new trail between Chambersville Road and Elks Mill Road, the Noxie Trail. It's part of that trail.
I'm familiar with the existing trail there.
Yeah.
More specifically, what kind of work is going to be done?
It's going to be widened, the trail itself, to I believe it was 8 feet. So it's going to be a bituminous pavement, is what the trail is going to be consist of. It includes, obviously, some minor grading to accomplish that work, the siding and placement of some benches along the trail, siding and placement of garbage and recycling receptacles along this trail. That's the bulk of the work that's being proposed.
Will there be any work done to the crossing on Shannersville?
That is not part of the scope. It stops at that location.
At Monocacy Way, entering into Burnside, essentially?
Actually, it's splits between the pool and the railroad tracks that you're referring to.
Yeah, I was referring to the railroad tracks at right outside Burnside.
Correct. Yeah.
Is there any thought, then, to continuing that work through Burnside down to Monocacy Way to Union Boulevard?
I don't know if, at some point, I'm sure. I don't know if it's anything already in the works or in a 5-year capital plan.
I'll just say this. We applied for grant funding for that connection all the way down to Sand Island and the D&L Trail. We applied for a couple of different grants. So far, honestly, we've been unsuccessful. But that would connect that trail and make it part of a, you know, more like a network then. So that's the ideal.
Understood. But we've secured funding. Well, you're asking us to approve the contract for this.
Yes.
And where are these dollars coming from?
Two grants, DCNR and North Hampton County REC.
Understood. Thank you. Any other discussion on 10F? Clerk, please call the roll.
Ms. McGrone?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Any new business for members of council? This meeting is adjourned. Thank you for joining.